Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Celebration in Miami's Little Havana neighborhood continue this Saturday after the death of former Cuban President Fidel Castro.
I shouldn't be happy because a person has died, but he separated my family. My parents never got to see Cuba again. So today I rejoice for this.
Fidel Castro died Friday at the age of 90. His brother, President Raul Castro, confirmed his death on state media Friday night, and he added that a funeral organizing committee will bring to the Cuban people detailed information on the organization of the tribute for the founder of the Cuban Revolution. Fidel Castro made Cuba the first communist country in Western Hemisphere. Under Castro, Cuba became a one-party communist state. Industry and businesses were nationalized, and socialist reforms were implemented throughout the country.
Castro became an activist for the poor and promised democracy, but he went on to rule Cuba for more than 40 years with an iron fist. In 2006, Castro temporarily handed over some of his powers to his younger brother Raul as he battled health problems. That same year, Cuban TV broadcast the celebrations of his 80th birthday, which included a meeting from his bed with Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Many are left to ponder now whether the communist government Castro worked so hard to hold together will continue under the power of his brother.
And the United States restored diplomatic relations with Cuba on July 20th of last year, but has maintained the commercial, economic, and financial embargo against the island. President Obama, however, has moved aggressively to restore economic relations with the country, implementing a number of changes as recently as October 2016. This is VOA News. While members of President-elect Donald Trump's transition team debate who should serve as his Secretary of State, Trump moved ahead Friday with two more appointments. Kathleen McFarland will serve as Deputy National Security Advisor, and Donald F. McGahn will serve as Assistant to the President and White House Counsel. Neither position requires Senate confirmation. Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud says an arrest has been made in the car bombing that killed at least 20 people and injured more than 20 others in a crowded market in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, Saturday. According to security officials, at midday local time, a man parked a car laden with explosives at the entrance of an open-air fruit and vegetable market in the city's neighborhood. The blast happened at the entrance to the Birta Market, which is close to Mogadishu's main airport. White smoke could be seen billowing over the neighborhood after the blast. Officials in northwest Pakistan say a group of four heavily armed militants attacked a mosque on an army facility Saturday, killing two soldiers, wounding 14 others. Authorities say all four militants were killed in the assault on the Gilani camp bordering Afghanistan. A breakaway faction of the Taliban has claimed responsibility for the strike. The Paris prosecutor says France has avoided an imminent terrorist attack, and five recently arrested suspects received their orders from the Islamic State group. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports for VOA. The men allegedly had been planning to strike targets near the capital next week.
Paris prosecutor François Molins told reporters that the men had been receiving instructions via an encrypted app from an Islamic State commander in the Iraq-Syria region.
Les premières exploitations qui ont pu être réalisées.
He said the men were planning to strike the Paris area next Thursday, although the exact target was not clear. He said authorities had found screenshots of Google Maps highlighting several places. Reports say the targets under consideration were police offices and the domestic intelligence headquarters in Paris, along with Disneyland theme park outside the capital. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
About 300 migrants have been arrested following a riot in Bulgaria's largest refugee camp as Greece calls on European Union member states to speed relocation efforts after a tragic accident killed two migrants in an overcrowded camp. After visiting the camp, Bulgaria's prime minister said six of the migrants are considered a threat to national security. U.S. action film star Steven Seagal received a Russian passport from the country's president Friday at the Kremlin. The president expressed hope that Seagal's dual citizenship is a sign of gradual normalization of our relations between countries. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Most of them had a sense of reflection because he had been a figure looming large, either as an inspiration for the anti-colonial revolutions.
Cubans in Havana take to the streets to mourn the passing of revolutionary leader Fidel Castro.
We put up the notice and we gave out a press release for the receipt of an application from observers who would want to observe the election, both local and international.
The Electoral Commission of Ghana approves poll observers to monitor the upcoming December elections.
COSAT is very disappointed by what the current president of the country has failed to do for the workers. But with Cyril Ramaphosa, we have someone who is the founding general secretary of the National Union of Mine Workers.
And South African Workers Union COSATU endorses Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa to be president, a move seen as a rejection of embattled President Jacob Zuma. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The world is reacting to the death of Cuban leader Fidel Castro Saturday, with celebrations among the country's exiles in Miami and expressions of sorrow from some world leaders. Cubans in Havana took to the streets to mourn the passing of revolutionary leader Fidel Castro. For many, he was the leader they grew up with, the one their parents knew. This, as much of the world reacts to the Cuban leader's death Saturday with shock. Castro, analysts say, was a major player in Africa. For an African reaction, I reached political analyst Dr. Somadu Dafikeni.
Well, I do think that most of them had a sense of reflection because he had been a figure looming large, either as an inspiration for the anti-colonial revolutions or for the kind of solidarity work that they saw after they were independent, providing training for some of the health officers, as well as training for some of the agricultural officers.
Some critics in Africa say that he supported some despots or some dictators who meted untold hardships towards them. And to them, he is not a hero as many Africans see him.
Well, remember that in the context of Cold War, not even United States of America or USSR would be innocent when it comes to the support of despots. Either the West would have supported Mobutu Sese Seko or Castro would have supported Mengistu, but all of them are known to have been autocratic towards their people. So to that extent, in the space of international relations.
Some of his critics say that his policies and his stance basically did not do well for his people, particularly when it came to the U.S. economic blockade to Cuba, that they suffered unnecessarily, and that is what led to a mass exodus of his people that went into exile to several countries, including the United States.
Without any doubt, but would you then be accusing Castro for the economic embargo, or would we say that the country that imposed economic embargo ought to take some responsibility in that respect? Because when you look at some of the programs, such as free education, such as free health, many people do put a counter argument of saying, we wonder what could have happened if there was no economic embargo, which left Cuba relatively and massively crippled. So to that extent, I do think that, yes, his foreign policy might have triggered animosity with the U.S., but at the same time, many debate whether the punishment was proportional to, what was happening in the country. At the same time, when Castro took over Cuba, much of Cuba was controlled by foreign companies, and much of the Cuban resources not in their hands. So he tried to bring those resources, but at the same time, it is true that Cuba suffered immensely because of economic embargo.
How inspirational was Fidel Castro to Africa as a whole, and what lessons do you think Africans will draw from his experience?
Well, I do think that during the anti-colonial struggles, he loomed so large in terms of the guerrilla warfares, in terms of the socialist revolutions, and in terms of towering leadership. Hence, you could see many other leaders trying to mimic him. And also the fact that he believed in what he believed in, whether we agreed with it or not, but he lived within those principles up to his death. That is not usual in the main. And also we often hear leaders amassing a lot of wealth to themselves, living in palaces. We have not yet received such, indications in the case of Fidel Castro. And the fact that even though he had ruled for a very long time, which was, one of those periods which become untenable, that your personality become an imprint on a nation, that when he was sick, he decided to step aside and not interfere with the reforms that Cuba was taking, is also a sign of courage, especially when you had been a leader for such a long time.
That was political analyst Dr. Somadoda Fikeni commenting on the passing of long-term Cuban leader Fidel Castro Saturday night. Mr. Castro was 90 years old. The Electoral Commission of Ghana has begun approving both local and international poll observer groups to monitor the upcoming December 7 general election. The commission, however, says groups affiliated with political parties will not be allowed to monitor the polls. This after commission officials met representatives of political parties at the Inter-Party Advisory Committee, or IPAC, in the capital Accra on Friday. For more regarding the election monitoring teams, I reached Eric Jakpasu, spokesman for the Electoral Commission.
We put up the notice and we gave out a press release for the receipt of application from observers who would want to observe the election, both local and international. And among the requirements, we want to know the name of the observer group, the leadership, the composition, their experience in election observation, together with their passport pictures, and then necessary contact, all this subject to the approval by the Electoral Commission. It was clearly stated in the release and the advert that groups which are affiliated to political parties would not be granted the accreditation to observe the elections in the country. So we have received a number of applications from both local and international observers, as well as foreign missions and embassies.
What numbers are we talking about here in terms of those so far approved by the Electoral Commission?
Yeah, the approval process is still ongoing, but as at the meeting we had today with the political parties, tentatively we are talking about 400 international observers, embassies and foreign missions about 200, CFI France alone is having about 1,000 observers, together with about 10,000 local observers.
Did they specify which regions or cities they would want to observe some of these elections, or the Electoral Commission, once approved, they can pretty much go anywhere to observe the electoral process?
Yes, once accreditation is granted, they can go anywhere, but they need to inform the commission where they will be concentrated and where the rest also will be dispersed throughout the country. So once accredited, they should have access to all parts of the country where the election is going on.
We heard reports that the Electoral Commission officials met political parties at an IPAC or Inter-Party Advisory Committee in the capital, Accra. What were some of the issues that came up? Because some of these political parties have been expressing concern about the electoral processes, which they are displeased about.
Rightly so. With just a few days to go into the polls, you know, we're having the special voting on the 1st of December and the main election on the 7th of December. Yes, it is true, political parties have raised some concerns about the entire process. In fact,
The major concern centered around the voters register, the proxy list, and then the special voters list, as well as they wanted to know the state of preparation for the elections. They were also interested in the election observation and then the process for the transmission of election results electronically from the various constituency centers to the National Collation Center. And most importantly, they were also concerned about the modalities for the training of party agents. And all these issues were addressed at the IPAC meeting today.
What about the issue of the register that will be used for the election? I know the Electoral Commission has put it out there, but what were some of the issues that came up concerning the voter register that will be used for the elections?
Yeah, the major concern was around the number of people on the special voters list. You know, in our jurisdiction, special voters are what some of them may call early voting. In special voting, we have some categories of voters who are allowed to vote before the main election. We are talking about the security personnel, we are talking about media, and then election officials who will be very much engaged on election day. So the law allows these three categories of officials to vote beforehand. And, you know, the figure of people who are supposed to engage in or to take part in the special voting has been of some contention. So they brought it up today, and I think we have finalized the list of special voters, and the figure is out, and I think the political parties are now comfortable with the final figure. And then the voting centers, the number of voting centers that will be used for the special voting.
Eric Jakpasu is the spokesman for the Electoral Commission of Ghana. He spoke with me from Accra. The Congress of South African Trade Unions, or COSATU, South Africa's biggest workers' group, says it is disappointed that President Jacob Zuma has failed to implement policies to improve the living conditions of its members. The group has publicly announced it is endorsing Cyril Ramaphosa for president. Ramaphosa is the country's deputy president and the deputy leader of the ruling African National Congress, ANC. Sizwe Pamela, spokesman for COSATU, told me members of the group plan to decide if they should continue their alliance with the ANC.
We have to make this very clear. 7 or 8 years later, COSATU is very disappointed by what the current president of the country has failed to do for the workers. But with Cyril Ramaphosa, we have someone who is the founding general secretary of the National Union of Mine Workers. We have someone who was a principal negotiator during the drafting of the South African Constitution. But we also have a businessman. And we have made this very clear, and some of our critics have said, how do you push for someone who is a millionaire and almost a multi-billionaire to be the leader of the country? And we said, we are not looking for a leader of the workers, of the working class. We're looking for the leader of the country, which means there can be no discussion that says someone is overqualified to be the president of the country. And a billionaire or a millionaire for us, who has a background in the working class movement, is the right person to take us forward, because we don't really believe that Ramaphosa will be stealing from the past. We don't believe that he will be surrounded by the level of scandals that are surrounding the current president. And we don't believe that Cyril Ramaphosa is going to go out there really to betray the working class in a manner that President Jacob Zuma has done.
Basizwe, wouldn't you be coming out in the next few years to say that you are disappointed in him also because you defended President Zuma and you basically gave him the support that led to his presidency? What makes you think there will not be a repetition, in this case, throwing your weight behind Cyril Ramaphosa?
Actually, in our discussions, we had a three-day Central Executive Committee meeting. We can tell you now that a number of our affiliates actually were very vocal in saying that the alliance with the African National Congress 2 decades later has not worked. We have been betrayed by the African National Congress, and that what we need to do is to reopen the debate about the relevance of the alliance with the ruling party. What we have made it very clear to our affiliates is that we hear that position, but the 12th Congress that took place in October last year gave us a mandate. And if we are going to be an organization that listens to its own members, we have to implement this decision up until 2018. because in 2018 we are going to our next Congress. The fact of the matter is that there is no naivety on our side as to the failures of the African National Congress as a ruling party 2 decades later. We are currently struggling with the implementation of the national minimum wage and the national health insurance. We acknowledge that. But if we want to hand over an organization that will listen to its own membership, we can't elevate our own personal feelings and personal decisions to be organizational decisions. So while we have done a lot of analysis about the impact and the effect of a ruling party on the lives of the workers, we still owe it to those workers to be allowed to make that determination as to whether do we break ranks with the alliance or not.
When do you think that decision could be made in terms of breaking the alliance or not in this instance? Because the alliance has survived for the past 20 or so years.
When we came out of the 12th Congress in November last year, we actually went into a meeting discussing the outcomes of the alliance. In our own discussions, we reflected based on the report that we drafted, looking at the resolutions on the outcomes of the Congress, that a number of our own affiliates had actually refused to participate in a debate about the alliance because they said, unless you open the debate about the relevance of the alliance, we're not going to participate.
Sizwe Pamela is the spokesman for the Congress of South African Trade Unions, or COSATU. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. The leadership of the Ugandan Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, urges Ugandans to join their defiance campaign. This, the group says, it's for citizens to claim their seized victory by the ruling National Resistance Movement Party in the February general election. Supporters of the ruling party have condemned the opposition's call as a recipe for possible instability and violence. For more regarding the opposition campaigns, I read Sam Angoliga, a leading member of the Forum for Democratic Change.
Party in its own right, it believed it won, but because of lack of transparency in the declaration of the results by the electoral officials who are partisans leaning on the side of the government, gave the government that victory which is supposed to be for FDC.
But what can the people do at this time? The election is over. Some people said, why don't the FDC plan for the next election instead of causing trouble with this statement and pronouncement that could possibly lead to clashes between your supporters and security agencies?
In normal circumstances, there's supposed to be no confrontation between the government because the government knows the truth. But otherwise, this is a price FDC is willing to pay because you cannot see what is rightfully yours taken away and you decide to keep quiet about. For how long can this go on? When you have won, let that victory be given to you. You have to make noise, you have to shout.
Does that mean that Ugandans should be ready to see more of these campaigns of defiance?
Yeah, Ugandans will see more of it because what FDC is asking is the accountability of the declared results. They want a postmortem to be carried out. And they have suggested the government, let us do the accountability so that each person, each side will be able to get to satisfy itself that this is actually the true reflection of the results, which the government is not accepting.
How realistic do you think your demands are about accountability to really ascertain what went wrong? How realistic do you think this is? And do you think the NRM, or the ruling party for that matter, would agree to that?
Well, FDC is not just a startup party. FDC is led by a team of intellectuals. So they cannot make demands which don't exist. What they are making is what exactly exists, and they are very sure of it. Even at a legal level, the claims are very genuine.
But do you think you have the full cooperation of the NRM, particularly when the FDC accuses the NRM of rigging elections since 2001?
Well, the movement is not willing to do that. The FDC since 2006 suggested for electoral reform, stakeholders to be part of that team, which the movement has refused. Movement is an interested party, but it goes on to nominate, appoint the electoral officials by its own, so it puts its own people there to organize elections for themselves, which they easily reach, and steal the victory from a party which has won. So we don't expect them to cooperate. And apart from the defiance, the defiance will raise awareness among the people, even including to the movement, including the movement legislators, because declaration of results is an interest for each and every reasonable person. So we want this electoral commission appointment of it, constituting its officials, should be reflecting all the stakeholders, including political parties, religious organizations, civil society organizations. They should all form part of the electoral commission.
Sam Angoliga is a leading member of the Ugandan Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. A Catholic priest who wants to return to Rwanda to run for president in 2017 has been denied entry into the country. Last week, Father Thomas Nahimana and three members planned to return home to register their opposition party. But on Wednesday, they were barred from boarding a connecting flight to Kigali. Kagame's government has been praised for transforming a nation that was once torn apart by genocide in 1994. But it has also faced criticism from international rights groups and Western donors for stifling free speech, a charge it denies. David Himbara is a former economic advisor to President Kagame. He is also a friend of Father Nahimana. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in Toronto, Canada, for the latest on the story.
The head of the party, Father Nahimana Thomas, and an assistant are still stuck at the airport in Nairobi. The assistant, the female, Nadid Kensinje, and her baby are back in Canada. That's the status as of today.
How far is Father Nahimana determined to go to reach Kigali?
Well, he says that he's not leaving Nairobi until he's allowed to go to Rwanda, because he's a Rwandan who is going back to prepare to compete for 2017 elections, and that he's not returning. There is no reason to. He's in good order, and he's determined to stay until allowed to return to Rwanda.
Has there been any comment or response from the Kigali government?
Zero. It's been completely silent.
Father Nahimana intends to, as we understand it, was planning to go back to Rwanda to register an opposition party and run for president in 2017. As you know, Mr. Himbara, another opposition politician, Victoire Ingabire, did return to Rwanda to contest in 2010 and was subsequently convicted of crimes linked to genocide and denial in 2012 and jailed for 8 years. Father Nahimana is also on record for having called Kagame's government a dictatorship and has in the past called for both Tutsi and Hutu victims of the genocide to be remembered. Would this be the reason why maybe he's not being allowed in?
First of all, let me say that in the past, the regime in Kigali normally harasses opposition via different means, refusing to register, then throwing them in jail on trumped up charges, as in the case of Ingabire. This is the first time that we see the closure of airspace, as it were, for those wanting to return. To deny a Rwandan to return is something new, because you see, it hasn't happened before. I think we are looking at the heightened fear by the regime of anything that might negate this the false narrative that 100% of Rwandans want Kagame to stay in power. So they are determined to show that facade. So this man, by returning by running against the regime, he's saying no. There are Rwandans who don't buy into that, who don't buy that facade. So that's why I think they have closed completely the possibility of him returning.
In the unlikely event that the Rwanda government allows him in, how safe would he be, you think?
I would be willing to bet that he will land in prison, because they often use this genocide ideology. If anyone does not say things from the same song of the regime, say, for example, by questioning the death of Hutus in under the RPF regime, I think which is a genuine concern, which is a legitimate concern that has been raised by all others, including the UN. But that's the line that they use against this man and throw him in jail, that is practicing genocide ideology.
David Himbara is a former economic advisor to President Kagame. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today. Baby, love me tender. Baby, palanga my love. When you can dance, you do the very well. Baby, would you know I hello?
DG Records.
And Tiger Entertainment.
Somebody else.
Baby, if you love me, my life goes sleep. Baby, if you keep me, my life will go sleep. Me, I go just there watch you over there. Go massage you over. Pull on you, smell me over to back. I go rock you over. Baby, you know I love you. And I'm ready to give you the move. I want to make love to you. Romantically, organically. Baby, I want you. After you, now you again. Shaping amigo hustle, after the hustle, now you go again. Oh my baby boo, I love you like. Baby my one need is sharp. The way you dance, I see Beyonce. Only you me a fancy. Oh nya si jide kwaka ochi ma kwa na koji kapa ma. Njide ka jide kwaka ichi o mkiji ka o. Baby if you love me, my life go sweet o. Baby if you kiss me, my kachuku ma logo sleep o. Me a go just there watch you go massage you over. Pull up your small me over to back. I go rock you over. Baby if you love me, my life is sweet oh. Baby if you kiss me, my kachuku ma logo sleep oh. Me I go just there watch you over. Go massage you over. Pull up your small me over to back. I go rock you over. Baby la hot, you deserve a man like me. Give you my heart, give you everything you need. Mommy, yo, do mommy, yo, do mommy, yo. Baby, do I love you like. Baby, my boy, need it sharp. The way you dance, I see Beyonce. Only you, me, I fancy. Oh, now, see, she did quack, I would you, my boy, and I go, she kept on. She did catch, she did quack, I eat you, Kijika. Baby, if you love me, my life goes sweet, oh. Baby, if you kiss me, my life goes sweet, oh. I don't go sleep, oh. Me, I go just there, watch your mind. Njide ka jide kwaka iji o, mkiji ka o. Baby boo, I love you much. Ima kwa nidisha. Now you be my special package, you must take it home, baby.
My humble father, Sinachi. My loving daughter, Sinachi mo. My baby mama, Sinachi. Tele momodu, Sinachi mo. No be by force to go Dubai. I've been a waiting cause the fight. And I just did my own, they laugh, yeah. Because you got the day my side. They want to take away my favor. They want to spoil in my career. And I know say I get the flavor. And you feel taxi in Abania. I forgive and I forget. Baba God, he knows the best. My papa just buy you jets. I'm about to take off everywhere.
Hey, Osinachi. I'm no kwa. Osinachi. One name, man. Osinachi. Oh, I'm watching. Hey, Osinachi. Mama. Osinachi.
I go name my first daughter Sinachi, my loving mother Sinachuku, promotion letter Sinachi, Iyawo mi Sinachi. Now we shutting down Malaysia, every show the boy they conquer. Thank you Lord, you showed me love. Now I know I'm not alone. I go sing praises from house to church. I go throw party for every town. See my motto, see my mouth. Tell me why I no go shout. Not because I suffer pass, not because I pray and fast, not because
And I thank the Lord who oversee me. And I thank the Lord for humbles me. And I thank the Lord who give me power. Oh, and I thank the Lord for all the riches. And they pray for house, you give me mansion. And they pray for car, you give me phantom. And they pray for fans, you give me stardom. Oh, you they show me love, you know, be like.
If no be God, where I forget? Forever we go give God the glory. We dey travel, dey go, dey come. Everything we do, dey prosper.
Now because your name not favor, all is by the grace of God.
Plenty people done dey ask. Now with the Baba do the task. Yeah, the Baba do well for me. Now my life become better. Not because I suffer fast. Not because I pray and fast. No be your show, no be just. I'm watching.
so when money not there, people they carry me there. When money not there, everybody run away. When money not there, na na na. People they use me they pay. Say when money not there, nobody look at my face.
Any work you do now for your head, yo.
Where you go?
Mastercraft. Every night and day, I swear I'm happy. How I got here today, me, I swear I'm happy. God, I beg for only one chance, and you give me plenty more chance. I beg for only one chance, now the chance they make them to dance. I celebrate, I jubilate. No time to complain, boy, you no got time to complain. Yeah, I celebrate, I jubilate. See, no time to complain, boy, you no got time to complain. Pop some bottles and just feel okay. Everybody make you feel okay. Oh, sexy ladies just they feel like you make. Make sure you just got to feel okay. Whoa.
You think they sweet me for my head, for my head. If you the best, I'm on your head, for your head. You think you the plan up on your head. Softly, softly, kill yourself for my people. Make me let you be late. Me, I they feel like I'm illegal.
If you carry chicken, I'm for my head, yo. If you drink it, rosé, I'm for my head, yo. If you, for my head.
Uh-huh.
But if you scatter this place, and I for your head, yo. Every night and day, I swear I'm happy. How I got here today, me, I swear I'm happy. God, I beg for only one chance, and you give me plenty more chance. I beg for only one chance, now the chance they make them to dance. Pop some bottles and just feel okay. Everybody make you feel okay. Whoa. Sexy ladies just they feel like you make. Make sure you just got to feel okay.
Again, you already know it's the tunes again. Oh, you are teasing, yeah. Shanties, na na na, yeah, yeah.
Want to tell you a story, yo. Body's gone, we are made for party. When you want to take a slow. Yes, it says you want your money. But I tell him no be so. But I got a plenty though. Girl, you know, no, no. I say you get down from front and back, yeah. And you sexy from head to toe, yeah. Baby, Bambino, use me show.
Yes, you see, come and roll. Girl, you carry over, though. Where I find the love is so. Cause my pocket heavy.
And that was our music. Hope you enjoyed it.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor William Eagle, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Nashwan Kiley, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the horizon will not disappear as you run towards it. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
ISIL efforts to recruit future terrorists are being thwarted, not only by defeats on the ground, but also through a concerted effort of Muslim voices, said U.S. Undersecretary of State Richard Stengel in a recent interview.
The battle against ISIL is being won. They have lost more than 50% of their territory in Iraq, more than 20% in Syria. The flow of foreign fighters coming into Iraq and Syria is down by 70, 80, even 90%.
The core of ISIL's propaganda strategy, said Undersecretary Stengel, is to say the West is against Islam and that it's the duty of every good Muslim to fight against the West.
The best way for America to counter that message is to empower credible voices, mainstream Islamic voices, who are saying that ISIL is not Islamic, that they're killing more Muslims than anybody else, that they're killing civilians, women and children. Voices of defectors, of young men and women who have come back from the so-called caliphate to say it's not what it's cracked up to be, that in fact these are murderers rather than people who actually believe in Islam.
The State Department's Global Engagement Center addresses ISIL content on the internet by amplifying these credible voices. The center partners with countries around the world to give greater capacity to those who are messaging against ISIL. There are 28 countries that are part of the Anti-ISIL Communications Working Group that follow a similar strategy, that of enabling credible voices. Foreign countries are not the only partners, said Undersecretary Stengel.
Not only are we working with the other countries in the coalition, working with the Silicon Valley tech companies, they don't want to have their ecosphere polluted by this kind of awful, noxious content. And so they are getting rid of it. One of the reasons that ISIL messaging is down by 50 to 60% is that those tech companies are taking that content down.
Ultimately, said Undersecretary Stengel, it's not the job of the State Department to counter ISIL's message. It's a job of the entire world, he said. It's a job of mainstream Muslims. It's a job of the 1.5 billion Muslims, the lion's share of whom reject everything that ISIL is doing. Those are the real participants in this battle.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.